If you would take the risk, I invite you to close your eyes. Follow me on this meditation. Imagine before you a mirror. And in that mirror, you see yourself. And then you see the following questions. Who? Who are you? Who are you to think? Who are you to think that? Who are you to think that you can? Who are you to think that you can change? Who are you to think that you can change the world? Imagine the words leaving the mirror, and all that's left is you. You can open your eyes and rejoin me. A number of years ago, the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee gave me this poster. It's a weird metallic sort of poster, and it's like a mirror. It makes it a little hard to read. Anissa and I were talking about that. But it's like a mirror. You can physically see yourself in it. And it asks those questions just in that way. Each time you get to a different version of the question, the colors shift. So who is one color, and then when it's who are you, you is changed. Who are you to think is changed and emphasized, and so on. And it gets all the way down, and then finally, you see these people holding up the earth, and you start to imagine that you, whoever you are, can do great possible things. It was around this time that there was this song on the radio from Ben Harper, kind of a pop reggae song called With My Own Two Hands. And I talked about changing the world with my own two hands. And I loved that song. I made it my email address. This was before I really planned out how long it would be to write that out, how confusing it is over the phone to spell that out. So I've changed it since then. And then I grew to actually regret it, not because I lost my idealism, but because my theology and my philosophy on life changed a little bit or deepened a little bit. It wasn't just that I thought I can change the world, but rather everything I do changes the world. Everything I don't do changes the world. It can be a powerful and overwhelming thought, one that we'll come back to at the end of service, but I really started to wrestle with not only can I, not only can you, but we do change the world no matter what. Social justice work isn't just done on a Saturday or a Sunday once a year, but rather it's the way, or can be the way, that we live our lives and we do our work day in and day out to make things better. By using our own gifts, whatever they are, we are changing the world. But the challenge before us is twofold. First, we must know what our gifts are and what they are not. And second, we must be aware of what the world needs, not just what we think the world needs. Being awake and alive to the plight of the world and those around us, whether it's a great or small need, allows us to meet people where they are and to show them compassion. It also allows us to be changed, to understand that our lives are not the only ones that matter. And in so doing, we change the world and hopefully put it on a course for good and just and righteousness. Nowadays, we, or at least I, but I think most of us, tend to keep our lives from being interrupted. However we do it, whatever the way, we keep our blinders on and the world around us fades away. The world might cry out in pain, hoping for our eyes and our ears to bear witness, for our souls to hear the cry, and for our hands to join theirs in working together. But we shirk it off, We try to avoid it, or we offer it just a token of opportunity before doing something else. So I offer a couple of stories of ways that people were either woken up or tried to wake other people up. The first comes from Connie Goodbread, a Unitarian Universalist who works for the Mid-South District. She wrote of a time when she passed a man who lived on the street asking for food, and she was driving with her granddaughter. Just before that, she, her daughter, and her young granddaughter, a very young kid, had just left the grocery store with $150 of food when they pulled up to a stop sign. And the young lady, the granddaughter in the back seat, read the man's sign and plea for help. After a difficult conversation for Connie and her own skepticisms running through her head, they made it home and they made the man a sandwich or lunch from their newly purchased groceries. Connie writes, "In the back seat, Juliet, my little warrior princess, whom I will hand this broken and desperate world to, a world where I have worked hard and done the best I can to make a difference. In spite of all that work, Juliet, the world is still broken. But Juliet, the hope of the world, sits in all her glee looking for the boy. Just the boy. Meemaw, is the boy gone? No, see, he's leaning on the sign. We turn the van around so that I can get in the lane that will pull right up next to him. The light is red. I roll down the window and hand out the bag. The sandwich has mayonnaise on it, so you need to eat it right away. I say as I hand the boy, and he is a boy, the bag. We look at each other. He has none of the things in his face that I expect to see. All of the assumptions, all the expectations I thought were there aren't. He certainly doesn't look dangerous. He has a nice face. He has tears in his eyes. I will. Thank you, ma'am. He takes the bag, runs behind the van and across the street to sit on a wall. He opens our bag and hungrily begins to devour the sandwich. He was hungry, Meemaw, Juliet, the young granddaughter says from the back seat. Ah, poor thing. Yes, Juliet, he was hungry. Whatever else is going on in this drama, his sign had been true, he was hungry. With tears in my eyes, all I can think is, ah, poor thing. I am not the hero of the story, Connie writes. This story points out many of my flaws. I had never done anything like that before. I would have driven right by that boy. I will not finish the work I have started. There is no one lifetime that is long enough to finish that work, to fix all of the things that are broken in this world. So I will hand over a broken and fragile thing to my grandchildren. For I was handed a broken and fragile thing, too. The boy is not the hero of the story. He is, however, an example of just how broken and fragile the world is. Juliet, my little Jiminy Cricket, is the hero. She told everyone we came in contact with that day and the next about the boy. Her story about him and the sandwich is sweet and sad, because it includes that he might not know where his mommy is, and he might not have a home. The story that she tells always ends with, ah, poor thing. We go by that corner a lot, so every time we come near, she asks about the boy. Where is that boy, Meemaw? I don't know, Juliet. The conversation begins all over about mommies and homes and the sandwich. And it always ends with, ah, poor thing. The next story, I don't know if it's true or not, perhaps it's a fable, but it always grabs my interest when I read it and hear it. So there's a minister who comes up to do his sermon. He gets up to the pulpit and he stops for a minute and then begins to speak. Point number one, he says, and most of the people in the congregation yawned at that point. They'd heard that many times before, but he ignored it and he went on. My first point is this. At this time, there are approximately 2 billion people in the world starving to death. The reaction through the congregation was about the same, since they had heard this point many times over and over and over again. And then he said, "My second point." And everybody sat up. Only 10 or 15 seconds into a sermon, and he's already on a second point? He paused. And then he said, "My second point is that most of you don't give a damn." And gasps and rumblings flowed across the congregation. And then he said, "And my third point is that the real tragedy among us today is that many of you are more concerned and more appalled and more shocked that I said damn than you are that there are 2 billion people that are starving to death." And then he sat down. These stories of being woken up or trying to wake people up make us think of our own times, perhaps, of seeing other people's needs or having to be jostled awake. Maybe you're a heavy sleeper like myself, and sometimes you need a good shake to get out of the doldrums of this world. There is so much broken and so much fragile about our world that it's hard not to just get on the defensive and keep going, trying to block out everything that's around us. But the truth is, real people are in pain. All types of different pain. And we can do something to help. That last story about the minister reminds me of a time that I gave a prayer before I was a minister. Believe it or not, I'm kind of a shy person. I tend to be quiet and stick to myself, though obviously I don't mind speaking ever so often. So being a shy person, imagine the horror I felt when 1 month in a church newsletter, I was flipping through back when we had paper, and I read that I had given a, quote, a rather forceful prayer at a homeless shelter. Rather forceful? I felt mortified. I mean, sure. I mean, I tried to make it loud without a microphone. I wanted to make sure everyone heard because I wanted to make sure everyone knew when it was time to eat. That was it. I felt so nervous that it took some time, a month or two, for me to go back to the shelter for the church's monthly meal, something I had done for over a year at that point. When I came back, David, the group's leader, one of the most affable, personable people I've ever met, David slapped me on the back and told me it was good to see me again. He asked if I would offer grace again tonight, and I blushed and I kind of begged off, saying, "No, you know, I think it's good that we all share the privilege of doing that, that someone else could have that honor." And he said, "Okay." I went back to my old job, cutting fruit. You see, one of the things that's easy enough, that was one of the few things that was easy enough for me to do. And so every month at the urban ministry in this town, I would stand over a large metal bowl, cutting apples and bananas and whatever else with whoever was new enough that they hadn't graduated to a better task. Most of the people were skilled enough. They'd move on to buttering bread or preparing the stew. But I stayed with the fruit, not because I was great at it. You don't have to be a master at cutting fruit. It's just that I was really bad at everything else. And so I joked with David sometime later about the fruit and the prayer, and he reminded me that we all have different skills. We just have to find what each of ours is. And laughing and slapping my back again, he walked away and said, "You know, maybe just cutting fruit is yours." I miss that monthly meal, that monthly offering, the chance to serve someone in need of a meal in that way. Not only did we provide sustenance for the body, but we provided relationships and conversation and community, a chance to sit and to get to know someone without pressure or pretense. For some of the volunteers, their work was in the cooking, and for others, their ministry was in the serving. Yet still others came not to do any of that, but they came simply to sit down with the hungry and the homeless and to chat. Our gifts are indeed in different areas, but together we created a momentary community that provided a bit of justice in this world. This act of service did not end hunger for that city, or probably for them even for the full night, but it did end some hunger, both for the body and the soul, for the people in the room at that moment. For some of us, our gifts, our greatness in life is not centered on marching on Washington or lobbying legislators, but in cutting fruit or in praying, however meekly or forcefully we can do it. Justice work looks different to different people. For some, it's service. For some, it's advocacy and witness. For others, it's education. Each of us have our place in the world. Finding it is what's important. So here's one more fable you might have heard. It's a story about a village, kind of like Takea's Magic Bread. It's a village where the townspeople are getting water by a river, and they start to notice that there are babies floating down the river. Have some of you heard this before? Only a couple. So they notice babies floating down the river. And they wonder, where are these babies coming from? We must save them. And so they call other townspeople to come to the river and pull the babies out. And suddenly there are more and more and more. And they're doing the service work, pulling them out. They try to find people and families to place the babies with. This goes on for weeks. Suddenly the townspeople start to wonder, why aren't we doing something about this? Why aren't we finding out where the babies are coming from? And so some of those town people pull away from the work of getting the babies out of the river, matching them with families, and they go upstream. They go to look to see what's happening to get the babies in the river in the first place. That's a story of how social justice finds its place in our lives in different ways. Some of us do the service. Some of us do the kind of systemic work. But each of us find a way to piece it together. I often talk about us finding our gifts as finding our greatness. There's a story from Vanessa Rush Southern, another minister. It was in the UU World, about this conference she went to, and she heard this worship that ended with saying, "Unitarian Universalist, you are lifesavers, mosaic makers, bone carriers. Find your greatness." Vanessa writes, "The group that heard the sermon knew that we are, as a movement, are in trouble. Unitarian Universalism grows or shrinks by small numbers each year, but against population growth, we're losing ground. We recognize that we must find our greatness again or preside over a slow drain to irrelevance. So it's time to declare a moratorium on mere caretaking of our communities. It's time to ask our churches to find and serve its greatness or shut its doors. We must find and find and find again our greatness. Explore what it looks like. What is our greatness in this day and this age? Where is the place where we set about knitting the world back into a unified whole? That broken and fragile place that we all know, where do we do it but here? Where do we go about loving the world and its hurt places, the world and its hurt people? Where do we focus at our efforts at resurrection and reunification but here?" She writes, "We need nothing less than to reclaim that spirit of fierce unrest, unleashed by people who know that life is either a daring adventure or nothing at all. We need congregations that have no bleacher seats, no time for spectators. People who will face the roiling seas and real or imagined dragons to carry themselves and their people to a land of milk and honey, to know that there are no small dreams." Another colleague of mine preached a sermon entitled "To Dream the Possible Dream," and in it he suggests that we ought to move away from dreaming about the impossible, but rather pursue a possible dream, one that exposes us to the real risk of failure, the failure to do what we might have done, could have done, and should have done. So often, I recognize the times in my life that I dream about this immense way to solve the world's problems, but it's so overwhelming that I don't do anything. It's true that nothing in life is settled. Everything matters. At the same time, that doesn't mean we try to tackle it all. Instead, we know what our gifts are, our greatness. We try to meet the world for what it is. That's why it's important to look in the mirror, to think about who we are to change the world, and to know that we are someone. I love the quote from Marianne Williamson. You've heard it, I'm sure, in different ways. That quote that starts, "Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure." It is our light, not our darkness, that frightens us. We ask ourselves often, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, and fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of the holy. We are all meant to shine. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people aren't insecure around us. And the light of the holy isn't just in some of us, it's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we give others permission to do the same. We're called to make justice in this world. And so this is indeed a time for greatness, not just for compassionate words, as Marian Edelman put it, but compassionate action. It's a time for us to look around and notice that the world is calling out for help, and it requires our presence to make it whole again. Each of us has a gift. What's your gift? Think for just a moment what it is you bring to the ministry of Brew, what it is you hope to help make this world, how it is you hope to help make this world better, a world full of injustice and pain, but also full of hope. We all carry with us such wonder, beauty, and grace. We have suffered and survived, but yet we can work together to create justice. It doesn't have to be overwhelming or impossible. We will hand down a broken and fragile world to generations to come, but that's okay. We don't have to get the moon. We don't have to reach for it. We don't have to get the stars that we reach for. We just have to make some change in our daily lives, in our communities, in our churches. And when we see that change happen, then indeed we know that the world will change. May it be so. Amen.